In the mornings, I'm going to be doing just history of the American Restoration Movement. And then, as a kind of parallel to that, in the evenings, I'm going to be talking with you about recapturing this vision of undenominational Christianity. I would say there's just nothing that needs to engage our minds more than every generation recommitting themselves to this vision of just being undenominational Christians. I would tell you, there's a great thirst for that still in the world. You know that? All you got to do is look around and see these buildings all over the place with non-denominational on the front of them or independent or something like that. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and I'm going to be discussing that with you. This evening, in fact, I'll teach a lesson that kind of sets that series off. But my understanding was that this morning we'd just do something kind of generic, so I'm going to do my favorite generic sermon for you this morning. And that is a lesson out of the book of Ecclesiastes. And the book of Ecclesiastes is in many ways my favorite study. I just finished in Jacksonville, Florida, doing a four-lesson series on it, so I promise not to do all four lessons this morning. But I'll tell you, it's a wonderfully practical book. I'm sure all of you have studied it many times before. But if you'll not turn me off too soon, what I want to suggest to you is four very practical lessons in this book. You know, the book of Ecclesiastes, I assume, is written by Solomon, although we're not sure about that. But maybe the primary thing that's of interest about it is that maybe more than any other book in the Bible, it's a book that's about this life. It very rarely anticipates anything beyond this life. I really think there are three passages in the book of Ecclesiastes that even hint at anything other than this life on earth, or life under the sun, as he talks about. It's a book that's about, in Ecclesiastes 1:3, what profit hath a man for all his labors which he taketh under the sun. It's a book about what's the best way to live your life. It's not systematic. It doesn't answer that question systematically. In fact, he kind of jumps around and he'll talk about an answer for a while, and then he'll discard that answer. Say, no, that won't work. That's vanity and vexation of spirit. And then he'll look at another answer, and then maybe he'll go back to the first one, and then he'll do a third one, and then go back to the second one. So you can kind of, you have to kind of jump about in the book. But in the end, it strikes me that there are four different answers that are given to what's the best way to live your life. Now this is a good lesson for you young folks. I'm going to try to get real practical with you as we go along, because that's a question you sure have to answer. You know, you got your life in front of you. By and large, Dee and I have lived most of ours, and we made our choices. But everybody has to choose, what am I going to do with my life? There's lots of advice out there. And many people would tell you, well, then, well, you know, if you're looking for that, what, you wouldn't look in the Bible to find the answer to how's the best way to live your life. There was a school of theology a few years ago that was very popular in the universities. It was known as God is Dead theology. And if you remember that, what those fellows said was, they said the God of the Bible is irrelevant to modern society. Because, after all, the Bible was written by a group of pre-modern, pre-scientific, pre-technological people who didn't know anything about our society, so how could they tell us how to live our lives? Good question. See, I had people ask me, you know, profound questions, like somebody would ask me, well, what does the Bible have to teach us about air pollution? Or what does the Bible have to say about traffic congestion? And I couldn't think of anything except maybe be angry and sin not. But I'll tell you the mistake with that. Mistake with that is that's not really what worries me. I mean, those are nuisances. But that's not my problem. My problem is a lot more profound than that. I mean, the things I want to know the answers to, a lot tougher than that. I had a really eccentric philosopher friend years ago who used to say crazy things to me all the time. But just out of the blue one day, we were talking and he said to me, he said, "Ed," he said, "do you know the difference between a man and a dog?" And actually, I thought I could think of several differences. You know, like number of legs and so on. But I said, "No." I said, "What's the difference?" He said, "The difference is a man knows he's going to die." Well, now that's a big difference. A dog is going to die. But a dog runs around all his life wagging his tail and he doesn't know he's going to die. But I know. And I have to think about it. And I'll tell you what my problem really is. I wonder what's going to happen to me when I die. And I wonder where I came from. And I wonder what profit a man hath for all his labor which he taketh under the sun. I wonder why I'm here. And what I want to tell you is that the answers that are available to you are basically the same answers that always have been. And that's what this book is about. Well, I want to quickly run through it for you this morning and tell you that I believe there are four different answers proposed in the book of Ecclesiastes. The first one in the first chapter, and you can find these throughout the book. But I put up here verses 16 through 18 of chapter 1. "I communed in mine heart, saying, Lo, I'm come to great estate, and I've gotten more wisdom than all that are before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow." Now, let me just tell you, I'm going to skip over this quickly this morning, but let me just tell you young folks that one way you can try to answer the question of what life's all about, you say, well, surely what we need to do is learn the most sophisticated philosophy, become as wise as we can become. And by the way, this book does not recommend ignorance. It says it's probably better to be wise than it is to be ignorant. But I will tell you this. He said, if you want to find out what life means through wisdom under the sun, through human wisdom, he says, you will not find it. Because nobody knows. He said, I learned as much as you can learn. And nobody knows the answer. As I looked at life, every way you can look at it, I can like verse 17, "And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly." My crazy philosopher friend that I was telling you about one time, we were talking, and he said to me just out of the blue, he said, "Ed," he said, "I've been thinking about it." And he said, "I have decided that the only people who really understand life are crazy people." And I thought about that for a while. And I thought it sounded silly. On the other hand, what would give some credence to that is if you just sit around and watch sane people for a while, you might think maybe it is crazy people who understand. And I sort of think that's what he says. He said, "I want to tell you what I did. I looked at life every way you can look at it." He said, "I looked at it through the eyes of the wise. I looked at it through the eyes of the schizophrenic, through the fool." And what I can tell you is there are no answers. If you want to know where you came from, why you're here, where you're going, said, nobody knows the answer. So now, you young folks will remember that. Now, you will run up against a lot of people in your life who will tell you they know the answer, but they don't know. Nobody knows. You ever hear that old nonsense story? I'll tell you one more story. You ever hear that old nonsense story of the fellow that wanted to know what the meaning of life was? And he had such great admiration for his professor, and he went to him and said, "Professor, what's the meaning of life?" He said, "Oh," he said, "I don't know that. But," he said, "I studied with the most brilliant philosopher in the world in Germany. So if you go there, maybe he'll know." So he went and asked this German professor. And he said, "Oh," he said, "I don't know what life means." But he said, "There is in India, high in the Himalayas, a guru who, if anybody knows the meaning of life, he knows." So this fellow went home, sold everything he had, made a trip to India, walked up to Himalayas, found the guru, and said to the guru, "What is life?" And the guru said, "Life is a river." And the fellow said, "Okay, now wait a minute." He said, "You mean I sold everything I had and spent all my money and walked all the way up here, and you tell me life is a river?" And the guru said, "You mean life isn't a river?" Okay. Now, let me just tell you that. What the book of Ecclesiastes says is, I don't care where you go. You can go to counselors, go to philosophers. Nobody knows the answer. That answer is vanity and vexation of spirit. Well, the second answer that's proposed in the book of Ecclesiastes is proposed at the beginning of chapter 2. This is the answer, by the way, of most people. If you ask them, well, what's the best way to live your life? If you want to know how to get meaning out of your life, most people don't try to find it by becoming philosophers. Most people don't try to become wise and learned. I very rarely run into one at Auburn. Most people, if you want to know how they live their life, this is how they live their life. I said in my heart, "Go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure." Now, if you want to know the American way of life, the American way of life is what life is all about, is having fun. If it feels good, do it. And just live life to the fullest and enjoy yourself. Suck it in with gusto. Live life fully. All right, a lot of you young folks, a lot of folks will tell you that. Now, what I want to just tell you quickly this morning is most people who espouse that as a philosophy of life don't do it very well. As most people make wrecks of their life, supposing that they're going to have fun and pleasure. You know, you probably had an experience like me of going in to work on Monday morning, some Monday morning, and all of my colleagues be sitting around the coffee table saying, "Oh, you ought to have been with us last weekend. I mean, we had fun. We went out and painted the town red and got dead drunk, and did we have fun?" And they all are sitting there and look like those cartoon characters that are about to bleed to death from their eyes, you know, and their heads are cracking and ready to crack open. And I'll usually pound on the table to see if I can help that. Now, that's not fun. I mean, that's foolish. They're not having fun. And in fact, most people just heap misery on themselves, supposedly looking for pleasure. Well, actually, in the beginning of the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, and I'm not going to read all this passage, he doesn't even propose that. That's a silly answer. He says, I acquainted my heart with wisdom. And so he said, what I tried to do is I tried to enjoy things while at the same time being wise. And he said, consequently, I did a lot of good things. I built houses, planted vineyards, and I had servants warm the house, made pools of water. I irrigated the fields. And I had more cattle than all that before me in Jerusalem, more gold and silver. Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I'd labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation. There was no profit out of sight. Okay. He said, I will tell you what I did. I did big things. And if you want to know what life is all about, why, surely what it's about is do big things. And he said, I made more money than anybody ever had, and I accomplished more than anybody, and I improved the livestock, and I irrigated the fields, and I was a patron of the arts. And when the time comes to die, surely that is what life is about. You can say, I did great things. You ever think that? I probably thought that a few times in my life. When I was young, I think I probably did think, well, you know, I'm going to do something really important. I'm going to think of some idea nobody ever thought of before, and I'm going to write a book that's so important that everybody will be reading this book 200 years from now. And now I've written 7 books and nobody reads them now. That won't give you any satisfaction. Now, we're going to see in just a minute. That's not to say that you shouldn't enjoy life. He says enjoying life is fine. In many ways, that is the fundamental lesson of the book of Ecclesiastes. But he says if that's what your life means, it's just that you've done certain things. Now see, most of us won't do important things. You get to the end of most of our lives and they say, well, what have you done? Now, you need to be careful that you don't just live your life. Oh, getting cars and doing things and having things. Well, that's a trap. And most of us will have very little when we come to the end. We can say, I've owned 3 houses and 8 automobiles, been to the ball game 500 times, and ended up $2,000 in the bank. That's your life? Is that all your life is? That's all your life is. That'll be empty. That kind of leads to the third alternative, which is suggested for the first time at the beginning of the 3rd chapter of Ecclesiastes. Remember this passage? Most of you remember this passage. To everything, there's a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to pluck up. A time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. Verse 5, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together again. I'll tell you the third answer that the book of Ecclesiastes looks at is if you ask the question, what's life all about? You can just say, well, it's not really about anything. It's just, we're here. Things happen. Now, philosophically, this is the philosophy of existentialism, that all life is. It's just that you exist. And that there are moments. And all our life is we just happen to be here at the moment. And one generation does one thing, and one generation piles stones together in one place, and the next generation comes and throws them away. And life is just this endless sequence of material events. This was the hippie generation's philosophy. All life is just enjoy it. Enjoy the moment. Well, actually, there are some few good things that you can say about that. I believe it's in verse 8 of the 3rd chapter, in which he says everything's beautiful in its time. It's okay to enjoy the moment. And there are a lot of good things that you'll experience. But I will tell you, if that's true, that's the worst answer of all. He said, if all life is just that we're animals and we're just trapped here and things happen to us, he says, I looked around and considered the oppressions that are done under the sun. You ever see anything bad happen? Yeah, a lot of bad things. And on the side of the oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they, who had not yet been, who had not seen the evil works done under the sun. He said, I'll tell you, if all life is, it's just a bunch of things that happen. So it'd be better to be dead than alive because you're going to see a lot of bad things. And in fact, he says it'd be better to have never been born and seen all the evil things that are done under the sun. All right, quickly, I want to show you now the 4th answer. So he says you're not going to learn the answer to what life's all about through wisdom. You're not going to get anything out of life if all you say is it's the things that I do. And if life is nothing but we're just trapped in it in a material world that we can have to think about, he says, that's the worst of all. But then he suggests a 4th answer, and here's the answer. Keep thy foot when thou goest into the house of God to be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God's in heaven and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. Now, if you want to get smart, if you want to get something out of life, let me tell you where it starts. What you need to do is you need to shut up and listen. I used to know a fella that I expect all of you know somebody just like him. I used to teach with a fella at the University of Georgia, and he knew everything. It did not matter what you were discussing. He knew the answer. And he'd tell you all about it. One of my other friends described him one time. He said, I would tell you, Charlie's problem is he greets every question with an open mouth. And I was right. What I want to tell you is, That's the way lots of people are. You ask the question, what's life all about? Everybody starts talking. Nobody knows. What you need to do is be quiet and listen to God. So he says, now that's a fourth way you can live your life. You can live your life saying that I don't know the answer. God's in heaven and I'm on earth. So if I ever know, it's going to have to be because God from heaven tells me what life is all about. Now, if you do that, here's the rest of my lesson real quickly this morning. I believe what that'll do is that'll give meaning for your life. If you put God in heaven and say, I'll trust God and live my life believing the things that God says are true. I believe that'll help you live life. It'll help you live life at its worst. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that's higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. I'll tell you something about your life. If you live very long, a lot of bad things will happen to you. A lot of things you don't like. You ever see anything happen in the world that you don't like? I do about 6 o'clock every night. I turn the news on and there'll be a lot of stuff on there I don't like. And I will tell you what you can do. You can live in anxiety. Worried about what am I going to do about all this stuff that's going on. I would tell you back during Cold War days, when during the Cuban Missile Crisis, I can remember thinking to myself, when we really heated up and came close to having a nuclear war, what should I do? My brother-in-law started building a bomb shelter, which would have been worth nothing. But I wondered, well, what should I do about this? And I thought of several things. I thought, well, maybe what I should do is write to the premier of the Soviet Union and say, now, if you fellows really get mad with us, I wish you would not shoot one of those missiles at Birmingham, Alabama. But I figured that probably wouldn't work. So what can you do about that? You can't do anything about it. Except to say that whatever happens, I believe he is higher than the highest regard. There's somebody higher than the premier of the Soviet Union, somebody higher than the president of the United States. That God knows what's going on. I don't have to worry about that. Now, I will tell you, that'll help you personally in your life, too. Everybody experiences personal tragedy. I preached in a meeting many years ago, 25 years ago probably, up in North Alabama, and I ate with a young couple, and later on some of the people asked me, they said, did they tell you about their little girl? I said, no, and they told me a story that's the worst story you can think of. This couple had had an 8-year-old little girl who had come home from school one day, well, and the next morning was dead. And that young mother, when she got to the point that she could say anything about that, said to them something that deeply impressed them, deeply impressed me. She said, I don't understand. All I can say is that heaven means more to me now than it ever could have meant before. Now, everybody has tragedy. Little children die. Bad things happen. Bad things will happen to you. If you put God at the head of your life, you have a way to live with it. Finally, if we put God at the head of our life, I believe it also lets us get the very best out of life. Now, this is really the theme of the book of Ecclesiastes. We could look at it in lots of different places. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that he should enjoy good. May his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can hasten hitherto? Who can eat? Who can hasten hitherto more than that? I'll tell you what he says. If you let God be the head of your life and say, I'm going to serve God, then what you're in a position to do is you're in a position to enjoy life. You have anything that's good? What you need to do is you need to be sure you enjoy it. You want me to tell you the worst thing that television does to you? The worst thing television does to you is not all that nastiness, although that is bad. And you sure never ought to get hardened to watching that stuff. But I'll tell you what's worse than that. television sells you a set of values. It tells you what's good and bad. It tells you how to be happy. And the set of values it sells you are the values of some filthy-minded advertising man on Madison Avenue. And I will tell you what he tells you. He says the only way you can be happy is to be young and to be rich and to be pretty. And I ain't any of those. And I never have been but one of them, and that was young. And so you can end up saying, man, I'm not happy. That's not what makes you happy. Years ago, when I lived in Birmingham, I had all five of my kids piled in the back end of our station wagon. We were riding down the fanciest road in Birmingham where the old mansions, steel baron mansions were. And all I could hear coming out of the back end of my car was somebody say, oh, look at that one up there. And somebody say, ooh, look at that one down there. Look at those big houses. And finally I said, yeah, I said, I imagine all those people living in those houses are probably the happiest people in Birmingham, don't you? I doubt it. I imagine in most of them that the wife was an alcoholic and the husband had stomach ulcers and all the children were hippies. And they probably weren't happy at all. And if they were happy, it wasn't because they were living in those houses. Because that doesn't make you happy. But he said, I will tell you, you want to know how to be happy? He said, take and use and appreciate and be thankful for the things God's given you. You got enough to eat? He said, who can eat more than I can? Fellow might have $1 billion, but he can't eat any more than I can. And I got all the country ham I can eat, so you can't do any better. You know, somebody might have a house with 40 bedrooms in it, but he can't sleep in but one. So he said, what you need to do is you need to recognize that God's given you things and enjoy. Most of us end up chasing life instead of living life. Most folks decide they want a boat, you know, so they work 3 jobs to pay for the boat, and then they don't have time to go out on it, and by that time they decide they want an airplane anyhow. So you end up not enjoying life. Now here, you young folks, let me tell you something. Don't let people send you chasing illusions. But live life really. And I will tell you, if you can, you got enough to eat, you got a good job, got a place to live, you can get you a good wife, you have some children and they love you and love the Lord, that's life. That's as good as it gets. And you need to not let somebody strip you of life by saying, we know what it means, and chase you to misery. But finally, there is a conclusion in the book of Ecclesiastes, one of the few places where the book does look above. At the very end, when he says what will really give meaning to life is that the conclusion of the whole matter is that we need to fear God and keep His commandments. For this is all that man's about. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Now I'll tell you what will really give meaning to your life is that we come to the end of our lives if we fear God, keep His commandments, do the very best we can. Believing fervently that what we do here we'll take with us. And I can tell you, I'm just like everybody else. I have spent countless hours in my life and weeks and months doing things that when it comes to the end of my life, I am reasonably sure in my last thoughtful moments of life, I will not think back on any book I've written or on any honor that has come to me or anything else. I'll tell you what I believe I'll think about. I believe I'll think about coming here
and the hundreds and hundreds of times that I've gone places to try to preach the gospel to people. Because, you know, you can't earn your way into heaven. But I'm really thankful that there are passages that tell us that God will bring everything into judgment, whether it be good or evil. And I do believe that there are things that we can do good. That when the end comes, we can take them with us. And that's what will give me to life.